organizers of the DEF CON hacking convention said on Twitter that 11-year-old Emmett Brewer was the quickest of 35 children to hack into replica websites of six swing states. The event meant to test the strength of election infrastructure as concerns swirl about vulnerabilities before the November elections. Meanwhile, the other children ages 6 to 17 tampered with vote tallies, according to the event's Twitter account, adding as many as 12 billion votes to candidates and changed candidates' names to Bob the Builder and Richard Nixon's head.
Vienna has dislodged Melbourne for the first time to be named the world's most livable city. The two metropolises have been neck and neck for years in an annual survey of 140 urban centres by the Economist Intelligence Unit. But this year, a downgraded threat of militant attacks in Western Europe, as well as a low crime rate, has helped nudge Vienna into first place.
Tesla announcing on Tuesday that its board has appointed a special committee to evaluate CEO Elon Musk's plan to take the electric car maker private. In a statement, it also added that it's yet to receive a formal proposal from Musk about his plan and that he would need the committee's approval to move ahead.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. It is Wednesday, August the 15th at 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. On the broadcast today, we're going to try to make you a little bit of money, or at least maybe save you from losing some money, with our stock picker segment returning this morning. Michael Grayson will be here in our second segment at about 5:40. He's an analyst at Vivaldi Capital Management. The big question, buy or sell? Some big stocks out there in the headlines. Tesla among them. How about Netflix? Others, too, that we'll get his read on this morning. In a minute, we'll bring in our first guest this morning to talk about cyberbullying, a timely topic. Now the kids are headed back to school, but first let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Shares are mostly lower in Asia today, despite an overnight rally as Wall Street investors jitters over the Turkish currency crisis appeared to ease a little bit yesterday. This morning, however, we're going to see some weakness apparently at the open. Later this morning, Dow futures are off about a quarter, down 73 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are down by about a quarter as well. In the rest of Asia this morning, it looks like the Nikkei is going to end the day off about 151 points, down about a half a percent. The Hang Seng is off more than a percent and a half, 429 points, and the Shanghai is lower by about 2%. In Europe, markets are lower as well, with the FTSE in London off by about a half a percent. The DAX in Germany off just by a fraction. And the same story in France this morning. Oil is at $66.11 a barrel, which is down about 93 cents. Here are a couple of quick headlines this morning as we see them on Newswire. British Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt says it would be a huge strategic mistake if no deal is struck before Britain leaves the European Union in March, as Brexit talks have stalled. He says they do not think it would be in the interest of any European country, whether inside or outside of the EU, that a growing number of countries are keen for a pragmatic outcome. Talks are stuck amid feuding about how to close economic relationship Britain should seek with the bloc after Brexit, and there is growing fear that no deal will be reached. Turkey is increasing tariffs on imports of U.S. products, escalating a feud with the United States that has helped trigger a currency crisis there. Turkey says it's imposing extra tariffs on imports of products like rice, vehicles, alcohol, coal, and cosmetics. And China's government says it has filed a challenge to U.S. tariffs with the World Trade Organization, specifically the tariff hike on solar panels. This adds to this dispute, ongoing trade dispute with the White House. The Commerce Ministry says 30% tariffs announced in January violate World Trade Organization rules and improperly help U.S. producers. Front and center this morning, back to school, and the fear and the concern over cyberbullying. Catherine Siegfried Speller is an associate professor of computer and information technology at Purdue University and is with us this morning. Professor, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Let's talk about first how serious the problem of cyberbullying is. You will tell us, I'm sure, that for most kids, their connection to their device, that's how they interact with their friends on a normal basis. So the threat is there all the time.
Yes, absolutely. So the one thing that makes cyberbullying very different from traditional bullying is that, you know, traditional bullying, kids could leave school, go home, and for the most part it ended because the bully didn't follow them home. Whereas today, with cell phones and everything being connected, the bullying continues even when kids are not on school campus anymore. As far as the problem is estimated, it's somewhere between 10 and 40% depending on the way that we define cyberbullying. So a large number of kids, again, possibly up to 40% of kids, are experiencing some form of cyberbullying.
What does that mean? What is exactly, how do we know that something that may be benign has turned into something more serious? What would be a definition of cyberbullying? What would be an example?
One of the best definitions would be repeated and intentional harassment, you know, some sort of mistreatment, usually a form of making fun of somebody, spreading rumors online or through some sort of like text messaging. And we also see a lot of embarrassment. And so, you know, videos might be posted on YouTube, or a really extreme example would be a voting poll posted on Facebook where kids can vote on which student should commit suicide and who would be least likely to be forgotten, you know, or missed if such an event happened. So that is a very extreme version, but other ones could simply just be repeatedly texting and calling somebody fat, you know, on a daily basis.
And so what is the guidance here for parents? Because I would bet you $1 million that as we're speaking here, there's some parent getting ready with their kid this morning and putting a cell phone, a mobile phone, or a smartphone in their backpack to take with them. What do they need to know first about the technology and then how to respond?
Yeah, so one of the things that we know is that parents often don't know much about that technology because technology changes so much. There are great resources online. One of my favorite sites is cyberbullying.org. It is research-based, information on sexting as well, information for parents, kids, and also school teachers and educators. And one of the cool things they have on there is, you know, the top 20 apps that students use. And so parents can go in, learn about these apps, learn what the apps do, and then that way they are a bit more informed. And so they, you know, maybe don't have to stay so up to date on what the technology is because there's a resource that's already doing this for them. The other thing, too, is it's all about communication and all about knowing your kid. So, you know, look for behavioral changes. Look for when the child is acting inconsistent with their technology. Do they keep changing the screen every time you walk in? Do they get upset if you're holding their phone? Do they think you're trying to, you know, invade their privacy? If they're acting different in any way, these could be signs of them being the bully or them being the victim of cyberbullying.
And the last thing parents want to do is further alienate their child so that they can't have this conversation and maybe come to some sort of solution to the problem.
Yeah, and parents, I'm going to tell you right now, kids are not going to come forward and tell you whether they are the victim of cyberbullying, and it's because they're afraid your response is going to simply be, we're shutting down that site or we're taking away your technology. And as you just said, it's the connection, you know, with their friends, with their community at school, and so you can't just alienate the child by taking away the technology. We need to be able to set up a communication or a line of communication beforehand so kids feel comfortable coming forward, saying what's going on, and they also know that the parent is going to respond and intervene. We've also seen instances where, you know, the old kind of suck it up buttercup, or you're being too sensitive, or you're going to let, especially if it's a boy, you're going to let a girl bully you. You know, those are types of things where our bias comes into play. And so kids are really afraid of how their parents are going to react.
Catherine, hang on with us. We're going to continue with Catherine Siegfried Speller, Associate Professor of Computer and Information Technology at Purdue University. We're talking about cyberbullying this morning. And when we'll come back, we'll have some more tips, perhaps, and talk more about this.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
We're back this morning with Catherine Siegfried Speller, Associate Professor of Computer and Information Technology at Purdue University. Our conversation this morning is about cyberbullying. Catherine, I know that you've suggested that perhaps parents have a cyber contract with their kids some sort of understanding ahead of time about how all of this will play out. What would that look like?
Yeah, so the technology use contract is simply a contract between the parents and the child, and it lists out what the expectations are when it comes to cyberbullying, when it comes to sharing passwords, you know, letting the child know that the parent isn't going to invade their privacy unless, once again, there are concerns or behavioral changes that the parent is identifying. And if there is a situation in which cyberbullying is occurring, whether they are becoming the victim or they are the instigator, the technology contract will lay out what will happen. The technology will be taken away. There will be discussion about changing or taking down the account for some period of time, contacting school officials, maybe meeting with the parents of the other individual involved. And so, again, it just lets the child know what is going to happen. And, again, for those who are afraid to come forward, it also lets the child know that the parent will, in fact, intervene if something is going on.
You know, the companies that are doing some of these social apps, Facebook, Twitter, some of the others, WhatsApp in there, we really can't count on them, can we, to make sure that cyberbullying is not happening?
No, absolutely not. So this is definitely something where, again, the parents have a significant role, and also depending on which state you're in, the school system may also play a significant role. So in Illinois, for instance, the schools are, you know, the schools in Illinois have a policy in place so that if there is cyberbullying occurring, whether on campus or off campus, which is also different than other states. So if a child is bullying somebody else and they're doing it from their home, a school can still step in, even if, again, the bullying didn't occur on site within the school. So, every state is different, so parents can easily, once again, go to cyberbullying.org, and there is more information about what your state laws are and how the schools are required to get involved.
You know, as we're speaking here, I'm thinking kids today are way smarter than many adults on how technology works. That's something that we adults should change, isn't it? I mean, is there... how do we learn more about some of these sites that they're on? And again, cyberbullying.org is probably a good place to go. But we really need to up our game as adults, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things is talking to your kids. And so have them show you the app that they're using. Have them show you what Snapchat is. And, showing that you're interested in the same things that your kids are interested in, it's always a good thing. And, again, opening up those lines of communication. And I always warn parents that if they overstep and they start to invade privacy, and what I mean by that is they're constantly looking at, opening up the phone and reading the text messages and doing those things without there being a reason for it, so without there being a behavioral change in the child. All you're going to do is push that child to start using other apps, what we call vault apps. So these are apps that don't look like text messaging apps, but they are. So it might look like, for instance, a calculator on the kid's phone, and you would have no idea that that's a text messaging app. The other thing that it ends up doing is kids will just use their friend's phone when they get to school. So instead of using their own technology, they're simply sharing somebody else's technology at school. So, again, there has to be a balance between, you know, being interested in what your kid is doing but not pushing them so that they're going to start keeping secrets from you.
Yeah, I can't imagine stakes being any higher than they are in these situations. One, for the outcome of somebody who's being cyber-bullied, and then also looking down the road, I wasn't aware of this, but cyber kids that are bullied in this way often turn out to become cyber bullies themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So we see that there's a relationship. So if, again, a child is the victim of cyberbullying, they're more likely to become a cyberbully themselves. And part of the reason is because you don't have that power that has to be involved when we talk about traditional bullying. So the small kid can't necessarily turn around and become the bully, you know, the big bully at school. But with technology, all of that physical power is taken away. So all you have to do is start sending text messages, creating those Facebook polls that I talked about earlier, and you now are a cyberbully. So it's a way of kids also taking out their aggression online, which is why we consider cyberbullying a form of cyberaggression.
Catherine, good information this morning. We appreciate you getting up with us and sharing this with us. And this will, have good thoughts for a good school year for everybody.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Catherine Siegfried Speller, Associate Professor at Computer and Information Technology at Purdue University. Again, that website is cyberbullying.org.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Tesla has formed a special committee to evaluate proposals to take the company private. This comes 1 week after CEO Elon Musk said he was considering it. The company, made up of three independent directors, says it has not received any formal proposal yet from Musk, who on August 7th tweeted that he had funding secured to buy Tesla shares at $420 per share. A blog post by Musk on Monday cast doubt on whether that funding had actually been secured or not. Tesla is one of the stocks this morning we want to focus on with our stock picker, a buy or sell. Michael Grayson is with us this morning again, analyst at Vivaldi Capital Management here in Chicago. Michael, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Great to be here, Steve.
I started out with this Tesla thing because I think that's on a lot of people's minds. Yesterday, I think I read that the board of directors over there has even told Elon Musk to stop tweeting. Is this a buy or sell area for Tesla?
Yeah, I think at this point it's very premature to make that type of decision. Just based on Musk's tweet last Tuesday and considering taking shares private, it's just difficult to determine what the real movement of the stock price is going to be from here. From a trade perspective, one thing I would note is that as an investor, you could consider purchasing the convertible bonds of Tesla. So those are hybrid security of the debt and equity. So the company has about $900 million of issuance at a $360 per share conversion price. So this is not a position that myself or my firm of Vivaldi has taken, nor would we, just for in terms of concentration and business risk. But again, if you're of the thesis that Musk is not really willing to raise more money through an equity raise, the converts could be an interesting way to play this potential private event.
You know, when all this started unfolding, shares of Tesla were up about 11% in a day. The company, I think, raised about $6 billion on that day. Why is it such a big deal that we're still talking about what he did and how all this unfolded?
Yeah, I mean, any time, and I think you're dealing with an entrepreneur like Elon Musk, either you're certainly going to have to deal with the friction of Twitter and him using his public platform to voice his opinion. But it really is an interesting scenario here, where if you think about, you know, Musk owns 20% of Tesla, insiders own another 5%, and then the more controversial tweet that he put out was that he secured funding through a Saudi fund, which also owns 5% of the public float. So, but bottom line is really, if this does happen, there's really a lot of obstacles to this deal. So, to your point earlier, a final proposal still needs to be presented. The Tesla board needs to review. Legal counsel gets involved. There are regulatory approvals, a shareholder meeting. An SPV needs to be set up to house these private shares. So there's a lot to consider here. So that's why everyone's kind of digesting it.
Yeah. Michael, you mentioned that this is kind of goes with the territory of with entrepreneurs. Does this at all make us sort of skittish when we look at those other folks?
Potentially it can. I mean, I think you certainly have to know any time CEOs are using Twitter as a sword against short sellers. Tesla is the most highly shorted stock right now in the market. There's about 34 billion of short dollars against Tesla. So, you know, it's really been an unsuccessful tactic. If you look through time, I think you can even use the Salesforce CEO, who's the only CEO that's more active on Twitter than Musk is. So it's definitely something to pay attention to when you're thinking about investing in these types of companies.
Well, we've been focusing a lot on Tesla. The other big story is Turkey. What is Turkey doing to emerging markets, and should that change any of our positions?
Yeah, it's absolutely sent some shockwaves through global equity markets. So in the last couple of days, the Turkish lira had dropped more than 25% against the U.S. dollar. Yesterday, things did seem to be easing a bit. The lira did add about 8% versus the greenback yesterday, which helped the S&P 500 snap a four-day losing streak, which was a positive for investors. But there's certainly already concern about the financial health of lenders with heavy exposure to these types of struggling economies and their own currencies. So this is, you know, this is a perfect example of what can happen in these types of markets.
I think people looking at this from the outside, just sort of from a headline perspective, might think this all has to do with the spat the U.S. is having with Turkey over this pastor, I believe. But it's deeper than that, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, so there again, like as I had mentioned, there's a lot of desperation for them to stabilize their currency, and the short term impact to these types of emerging markets can definitely be pretty significant when there's strength in the U.S. dollar. But this drop was things that can trigger it can be things as you mentioned, just failing to reach an agreement and in terms of releasing of a passer like Brunson. So it's definitely very interesting to see.
Michael, let's focus on content. I know that there's been a lot of discussion about Netflix and HBO and Time Warner. Who is the king of content, and how should that impact whether we buy or sell?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the thing that we've seen. You know, everyone's focused on viewership and the fact that Netflix has 110 million viewers today. And there's no doubt that Netflix is certainly reshaping the entertainment industry, right? So their streaming service, and of course they have a strong business model, and the fact if they can push up costs and drive out competitors, that certainly can be tough to compete with. But one thing this week, and actually today, that might be interesting to take a look at is AT&T just made a massive investment, both in terms of time and money, in acquiring Time Warner. So this is not only because they wanted to get more involved in the content arena and compete with Netflix, but also because they wanted to be in the theater arena. So if you haven't heard of a movie that's debuting today, it's called Crazy Rich Asians, you definitely will hear about it. It was a wildly successful book, and AT&T and Time Warner really think this is going to blow up. Primarily, if you're looking at comps for like this movie, this would be primarily they're looking to target Asian American community, just like Black Panther did with the African American ensemble. But it's really not just that demographic. It's really the way they're thinking about getting into the theater game is because audiences flock to theaters. People talk about it, they hear it, tell their friends, the cycle repeats itself. This can certainly be a big revenue source for them.
Yeah, and when you look at the numbers, if they're able to do that, Netflix really can't hold a candle to those numbers, can they?
No, absolutely not. And here's the hidden beauty behind the whole thing, right? So AT&T and Time Warner can really utilize this to the tune of tens of millions of dollars in revenue at the box office. But the worst case scenario is if it doesn't happen, it's really a drop in the bucket for them in the grand scheme of things.
So what should we do here if we have some of these in our holdings? Should we just keep them close, or is there some movement around of these stocks?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about AT&T. It's trading relatively cheap. I think most people are trying to still figure out what the corporate tax impact is going to be on telecom companies, which should be a positive, trying to determine if that's already priced in. AT&T does pay a nice dividend as well, so it could be an interesting stock here.
All right, Michael, good to talk with you again. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Really appreciate it, Steve.
All right, Michael Grayson, an analyst over at Vivaldi Capital Management here in Chicago. You can find them online at vivaldicap.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures now off 119 points, almost 0.5%. NASDAQ futures down about 0.5% as well. S&P futures lower by about that much as well, too. Also, gold, silver in the negative this morning in the red. Let's see, gold is down $9.10 an ounce, $11.91. Silver down just a couple of pennies at $14.805. Let's get an update now on agriculture and commodities. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. It was quite a night at the Illinois State Fair, the Grand Champion Auction. The Grand Champion steers, shown by Adam Miller of Livingston County, brought $60,000. And the Grand Champion Weather, that's a lamb, brought $8,500. The Grand Champion Meat Goat and Land of Lincoln Grand Champion Meat Goat brought $11,300. Quite a night. And Governor and Mrs. Rauner buying several champions in the commodities as well as in the live livestock auction. Oh, and one other note. I did buy, along with Gloria, the Grand Champion Blue Cheese. Price, $800 for 5 pounds of cheese, but it'll be well worth it, believe me. The Illinois State Fair continues through Sunday of this week. They had a great day today with good weather and a fairly cool breeze. It was a good day, and we enjoyed ourselves a great deal at the brunch to honor the farmers and ranchers of Illinois, and then, of course, the sale of the Grand Champions. And today there were two families from Illinois honored for having bicentennial farms founded the same year as the state of Illinois. And the two farms have been in the same families for 200 years. It was a great day at the fair. You have a great day, and I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Here's what is on the outlook today in terms of earnings. Macy's, Cisco, and Tencent all reporting earnings, quarterly earnings today on the report calendar. We'll get a look at mortgage applications from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Retail sales numbers are due out, the Empire State Manufacturing Survey. We'll get a report on productivity and cost, industrial production, business inventories, and we'll get a look at data on the housing market. The EIA Petroleum Status Report also due out today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, August the 15th.